RandomChatter.com presents
Oliver Queen,
an Arrow podcast.
Now I will fulfill my father's dying wish.
Dedicated to the discussion of the Arrow television series.
Bring down those who are poisoning my city. To do this, I must become someone else. I must become
Green Justice. Welcome back, everybody, to Green Justice and Arrow Podcast. I'm your host, Jay.
And I'm Josh.
And you've discovered the number one podcast dedicated to the CW television show Arrow, with discussion and commentary on all the various episodes. Hey, Josh, sweetie, can you do me a favor?
Every time you call me sweetie, you want me to do something for you.
Oh, yeah, but, you know.
All right, what do you want?
Could you read the episode synopsis here for everybody so we can get into our discussion? Because there's a lot of cool stuff to talk about in this week's episode.
That's it? You don't want like a gun or anything? Or
no, I'm good. Oh, you know, I would really love an exploding boomerang if you got one flying
okay.
around.
All
but
right. I'll see what I can do. So right. I've got Amazon Prime, so it's all good. All right, so
I hear returns are free.
I set you up for that, and I didn't even realize it. That was good. All right, so we're going to talk Episode 8 of Season 3, The Brave and the Bold. Best title so far this season.
Great title. I love it.
It aired on December 3rd of 2014, and it was not a very special Christmas episode of Arrow, but it was a very special episode. This one was written by Greg Berlanti and Andrew Kreisberg, and the teleplay was by Mark Guggenheim and Grainy Godfrey. They pulled out the experts, the first string writing team for this one, didn't they?
Yeah, this was the A team, as it were, all across the board here. They had the F team working on Flash, and then the A team working on Arrow.
There you go. Yeah. It's always the A-team, isn't it? But
that's true.
All right. So it was directed by Jesse Warren. All right. Hey, what goes around comes around. You know, at least that's what Digger Harkness thinks anyway. In life and his choice of assassination weapons, Captain Boomerang is in Starling City to pay back Lila for trying to detonate the bomb in his head when he was part of the Suicide Squad. I guess I can see where he's coming from. You know, but,
yeah.
But Oliver is not about to let that happen. But, you know, those dang boomerangs are just so fast. If only he had an ally with super speed that could catch some of those things.
Yeah.
Oh, wait a minute. He does. Barry Allen and all of the non-mysterious creepy members of Flash's team are visiting from Central City, and they're giving our archers a little assistance. You know, but Barry isn't so sure that he's okay with Oliver's methods of accomplishing all his goals. And that's when he gives Oliver an earful about superhero morals. Now, while Oliver is usually pretty good at taking suggestions and criticism...
that's
rich. All right. Anyway, yeah, no, Oliver really isn't interested in what the Flash has to say. So they're going to butt heads while they bust some heads. But they have to do it before it's too late for Lila.
That sounds like a great song, Too Late for Lila.
It does. That sounds like maybe something from the 70s, I think.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Wow, I was afraid. You know, the show has killed off its fair share of characters and beloved characters. And with all the foreshadowing that they were doing, I was so sure that Lila was not going to make it.
Oh, and especially when they all come down into the okay, Arrow Cave.
Yeah.
And see her laying on the table there just like Sarah was.
Sarah, yeah.
Oh, man. So, I'm glad she pulled through.
I was like, she just took it just went into her shoulder. Like, why is she dying?
Yeah, come on, suck it up.
Yeah. Argus training, it's like, not what it used to be, I guess.
No,
so,
no.
Before we actually get into discussing The Brave and the Bold, you had found a piece on the. We don't normally talk about the ratings, and this is exactly what you were saying on our Flash podcast, Scarlet Velocity. But the ratings for this episode of Arrow, because of the crossover between The Flash, were monumental. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, you know, as of the time we're recording this, they've got the preliminary estimates for the ratings for Wednesday night for Arrow, and it had a series best, the highest rated show of the entire series.
Wow.
Which was a 1.4 rating, but really it boils down to 4.34 million viewers overall.
Wow.
That's fantastic.
No, sorry. I think that was Flash had the 4.3. It looks like it was 3.9 million.
Oh, excuse me. I'm looking at them both. So Flash had the 4.3 and the Arrow had the 3.9, but that's still fantastic, especially for a CW show.
Yeah. And for not even having like a Christmas show, you know, log in or, you know, lead in, I guess.
Oh, yeah. No. Santa and the death zombies. Or
a special CW Christmas show there, obviously. Yeah.
So. The night the reindeer died. Oh, no, that was from Scrooged, I think.
Yes, I believe it was.
But anyway, congratulations on them. And you know, obviously, it had a lot to do with the crossover mm-hmm. from Flash. And it drew some of Flash's audience and probably vice versa for The Flash.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's great that they're getting that exposure so other people can maybe get into a series that they hadn't really given a chance. Because despite the fact that Arrow is a phenomenal show and probably arguably the best superhero show on TV right now,
mm-hmm.
It's on the CW, so it doesn't kind of have that built-in audience that one would have from one of the big networks.
Yeah, lower exposure. I mean, I know in my area around Baltimore, the CW is way up the channel. You have to go through all the big four networks. And then a whole bunch of other stuff on your cable or on your antenna. And CW's at like channel 54. It's way up there.
Really?
Like, yeah, when you've got like channel 2, 4, 7, 13 and stuff mm-hmm. like that for all the major networks.
Yeah, see, now here in Denver, it's actually channel 2.
Oh.
It's the first one. So we've got 2, 4, 7, 9, and then Fox is 31. So it's actually the very first one here in Denver. I don't know how much difference that makes, but
I don't know. You know, when people are browsing and you know, they're going up or down, probably they're not probably just typing in channel numbers. I don't know. That's how I would surf, just up, down. So
yeah, for sure. Me too. I had time to surf shows.
Yeah, that's great. I'm glad to see that. And again, these are amazing numbers for the CW. These are so numbers for like regular network television series and stuff like that. So
Sure. But even so, I think this might start to get some momentum going for newer viewers of mm-hmm. of the series and kind of help their overall ratings.
Would be interesting to see what happens here further on in season 3.
Right.
For the Arrow. There was in the last week here, well, we've been off for 2 weeks, but within the last week, DC and Warner Brothers announced that the cast for the Suicide Squad was finalized. So there was for those of you who don't know, there's a Suicide Squad film coming in, I believe it's 2016. And like the Justice League film and the Flash film that they've talked about, it's not going to have anything to do with the characters or situations that have been set up, unfortunately, on Arrow or on the Flash TV series. So if Green Arrow is to show up in any of these films, it is 99% certain it will not be Stephen Amell, which is too bad. But let's get over that for a minute. Suicide Squad getting exposure as a national film, which I think is really neat. They've cast the main six characters here, and so I just wanted to let everybody know who that was. The first one they list here is the Joker. I'm not sure if he is going to be a member of the squad. I'm doubting it. I think he's probably going to be the villain of the piece, just because he is, even in his best days, he's not a team player of any kind.
No.
And he's being played by Jared Leto, who people may have seen recently in Dallas Buyers Club or in Fight Club. And I'm wondering if he's in any other movies with Club in them. Interesting. But I'm looking forward to see what he does with that character. I'm not one of those people that just looks at a casting announcement and says, oh, pff, this person's not going to work, you know, because you have no idea what the situations are, or, you know, what their take on a character is. Like, I was exactly. never one to diss Heath Ledger when I heard that he was going to play the Joker. So, and then Will Smith is going to be playing Deadshot. Pff, man, he is not going to work for this at all. I just,
so, you know, you don't like, you don't.
I just don't see that. No. Yeah, I don't know. Okay. I think he's too old. But anyway, Tom Hardy will be playing Rick Flagg. Rick Flagg being, he's kind of the Diggle character. So he is the mission leader and is a member of, depending on what they do, Argus or, you know, just Task Force X. And he's not actually a supervillain. He just runs the team and kind of keeps the missions going.
Were you surprised that they picked Tom Hardy for this?
I had heard rumors that they were looking at him. I don't know if I'm surprised.
It seems odd that they would pick him after he played Bane. But then again, not that that's
I don't even recognize him as Bane. I mean,
exactly.
Right. So like. What was I watching? I was watching something else with him. Oh, I was watching Inception. And I'm like, okay, I really, because I've only seen Inception and then some other movie that he was in with Captain Kirk where they play CIA agents and they try to.
Oh, yes. Captain, yes.
Date Reese Witherspoon.
Yeah, that was, oh my gosh, I can't think of that.
Anyway.
It was kind of fun.
Yeah, it was fun. And so I look at him and I'm like, okay, I just don't see Bane. Like, the makeup, the mask, the extra weight, the shaved head, the voice, mm-hmm. It's like he just disappears into that role.
And his face is almost completely covered anyway. Yeah, but
exactly.
And you're right. I mean, he's not recognizable. And it's not like that hasn't happened in other areas, too. I mean, you have Ryan Reynolds is played Green Lantern, and it sounds like he's also going to be in the new
Deadpool.
Oh, help me out. Yeah, Deadpool, right.
He was Deadpool in Wolverine Origins, which was horrible bastardization of the character. But anyway, so, you know, you can get good stuff sometimes, you can get bad stuff sometimes. And so I'm looking forward to Tom Hardy. I think he's a great actor. My question is he going to be doing an English accent or is he going to be doing an American accent? Because to me, Rick Flagg is like quintessential American Army kind of guy. So doing it as an English officer would be interesting. Margot Robbie is cast as Harley Quinn. I'm not familiar with her. Jay Courtney is cast as Boomerang, a.k.a. Captain Boomerang. There's some other recent movie that he's in that I just saw something for, but again, I'm not terribly familiar with him.
Divergent, maybe?
It might be. Yeah, well, there's something else even like that's coming out in the next.
Oh, okay.
You know, month or so, and then Cara Delevingne is playing the Enchantress, which is cool. I'm glad they picked a character that nobody knows, but the Enchantress was one of the original members of the squad from I think issue number one. So she's got magical powers of some kind, you know, witchy powers, I guess. And this is going to be directed by David Ayer, so I think that's pretty cool. I'm looking forward to this. I'm sure it'll be interesting. It always troubles me when they try to pick up some of these franchises that are not quite as popular. You know, they put them on Arrow, and I think it works pretty good on the show, but. You know, you've got Batman and Superman and the Justice League and then the Suicide Squad. And people are going to go, what? Like, who are these people? So I think it's going to be like they're going to be pushing the Joker, you know, heavily for advertising for this. So
probably.
I guess we'll see.
Well, and if he's the villain, you know, then that would make sense, too. So but also sometimes I think it gets it gets some of those minor roles in comics. More mainstream.
Mm-hmm. It's always good to get that exposure. It gives people interest. And with more talk about a Suicide Squad film, I can only imagine we will see more of a Suicide Squad presence on the TV series here as well, which we'll talk about, given the fact that we've seen some members of it here. So we'll be looking forward to that over the next 2 years. There is one more episode before the mid-season finale. It is called The Climb, and I'm pretty sure Oliver will be doing some climbing in this episode. I'm just kind of going out on a limb here.
You think so?
Yeah.
Maybe it's just figurative.
A figurative climb?
Yeah.
Maybe it's maybe I've been reading it wrong. Maybe it's sea limb. And I don't
going
know.
Out on a sea limb?
He's going out on a sea limb. But that will be on next week, and then they will take, I think it's like 3 to 4 weeks off, and they'll be back in early January with the 10th episode.
Yeah, they're taking a break. Do they have Christmas in Canada?
I believe they do have Christmas in Canada.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Merry Christmas, eh?
they do, because Bob and Doug McKenzie did the 12 Days of Christmas.
Oh, there you go. All right. All
yeah.
Right.
So...
A beer and a tree. That's
take right. off, eh? And then I got my F Cancer shirt from Stephen Amell's campaign, which is great. It's a green arrow green with his picture on the front and the post-it on his forehead that says F Cancer.
And I want to thank you profusely for also sending one of those my way. So, and I got mine in the mail. I was very excited about it. I wore it to school today. No, I did not wear it to school today.
I hope you did not. Yeah, I'm talking with one of my friends at work. It's like he got a hoodie and we're like, all right, we should both wear it to work at the same time because they can't fire both of us, right? So, but no, I saw you post the picture to Facebook and then I'm like, oh, when did he get? Oh, that's right. I sent him one. Because I put it in the mail and it's like I completely forgot about it. That's how busy I've been.
Well, I was very excited when that show came up. All the packages I've been getting in the mail lately have been from me to other people for
yes.
For certain Canadian holidays coming up.
Yes. But
this one was for me. I got a gift.
Yeah, that was cool.
So thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome. All right. So you ready to talk about a little Brave and the Bold?
I am.
All right. So when we first heard about this title, I know I was very excited. I thought that, and we may have discussed this during the summer, that we were hoping they would do like an Arrow and Flash back to back on the same evening, and they could call it like the Brave and the Bold, you know, like programming slot.
Right.
Which they did not do that, but.
No.
The fact that they gave this shout out to the very famous DC comic series Brave and the Bold, I think was pretty cool. People may also know it as the title of a Batman animated series. It was on Cartoon Network for a couple seasons, about 4 or 5 years ago, I guess. So that's where they get it. It's normally a Batman team up, but it's always a team up of some kind. That's
right.
The format.
They've borrowed other things from Batman before, so I think
yeah.
they can borrow this title.
Yeah.
And I, you know, we mentioned this on our Flash podcast, Scarlet Velocity, and I encourage you to listen to that too. But I'll mention it here too, is that this wasn't what I would consider so much a crossover as a guest starring appearance by, you know, the Flash. But they did have a few references to things that had happened the previous night in the Flash versus Arrow episode of The Flash.
What I found interesting, though, they said it was last week. So even though it was on just the night before, Oliver referenced it as if it was happening or that it had happened a week ago.
Oh, so he was like in the show, he was saying that
yes.
he was actually in. Yeah, because he said he was in
Central City
last week.
Yeah. And
didn't Laurel kind of scold him for that? Because Arrow
yes.
was in Central City last week. Stop leaving clues.
Yeah, that was Laurel's one scene, which was a little bit more than Thea's one scene, where she just got blown by the air as Flash ran by her at a crosswalk.
Well, now, she did have one other very short scene where she served them drinks.
She brought him drinks at Verdant.
With her stomach showing. I was wondering if she was going to be in it again after that little crosswalk scene, but I guess she actually got a line. You guys okay? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to go get some more drinks and then train to be a killer! You guys need a sandwich or anything?
So, when it comes to discussing The Brave and the Bold, there was a lot of discussion about bravery and boldness and things like that. And I'm going to ask you, out of the two characters, out of Flash and Arrow, which one's brave and which one's bold, do you think? Can we make that distinction here?
It's kind of tough. I mean, because I think to some degree they each have some of those qualities. But I think the boldness comes more for Oliver in his in this episode, the methods that we're going to talk about here, and that mm-hmm. he was using to get what he needed, I think would be considered bold moves.
Yes.
And so which means Barry is the brave one. But I think, like I said, I think they both kind of have those qualities. So, what's your opinion? What do you think?
That was you said exactly how I felt about it. I felt that Oliver had real bold moves that he was making, and Barry was probably what would be considered more traditionally brave. Though, I believe that throughout the episode, Oliver learned how to be brave as well.
I agree with you.
There was now I can't say that Barry learned to be bold, because based on, again, on some of the discussion we had on Scarlet Velocity, we were talking about the difference of their methodologies in crime fighting and their outlook on life, I guess, and mm-hmm. that continues here. And it's not so much as bickering as more like friendly disagreement, I think, which makes it fun because the characters are verbally sparring with each other about what their beliefs are and everything like that. Mm-hmm. But Barry definitely feels that Oliver crosses lines that Barry at this point says that he will not. We'll have to see what happens with his character. He provides a lot of support to Oliver in this episode, and I think there's a lot of good camaraderie between the two characters.
I do too. You may disagree with this, or some people may argue with this, but I thought there was actually better camaraderie in this episode than there was in the Flash episode. Not that there weren't great scenes with them, and they kind of worked well together in that, but mm-hmm. I thought that they played off each other really well in this episode.
No, I agree with that.
And learned from each other.
Yeah, well, with the Flash, in the Flash episode, you had the two characters, they come together, they have disagreements, and then they fight, right? That's kind of the nature of one of these kind of crossovers. The two superheroes come together, they don't know each other, mm-hmm. or don't know each other well. They have some kind of disagreement and usually end up fighting over it. And then they make up and they become friends, and then they realize that together they can make a difference and go take on the bad guys.
And in this one, I think that's definitely what the Flash was. I think in this one it was more that in the end they weren't realizing that together they could. It was in the end they were realizing that each of them has qualities that could make them a better hero. I won't just say a better person, but a better hero. Mm-hmm.
Each other has those qualities that they could adopt for themselves, you mean?
Right. And just to, not to be contradictive or anything, but just to balance, I like the balance. So, mm-hmm. You said that maybe Barry didn't have the boldness by the end of the episode. And I would agree to you, but just to kind of give it a little balance, the definition of bold is not hesitating or fearful in the face of actual or possible danger.
Then he's bold.
Which, yeah, I was going to say, with the, like, taking care of those bombs.
Yeah.
In the way he did, I thought was very, you could say it was very bold. So, but I do agree with you. I think Oliver kind of got the more.
I guess I meant he was not bold in the way that Oliver's bold.
And
Oliver's boldness, again, pushes boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
pushes comfort levels and stuff like that. And that's what this whole discussion here is going to be about.
Definitely. Pushes boundaries, pushes comfort levels, pushes arrows deeper into your arm. Yes.
Yes. So Lila had a line when she and Oliver kind of were having a discussion about the extreme nature of things in Starling City. She says, sometimes bravery isn't enough. Sometimes the world requires us to be bold. And he's like, yes, yes, I agree with that. Yeah, and
it almost sounded like they were quoting an Argus slogan. Or you know what I bet it was? It was the Argus mission statement.
Might have been. I mean,
didn't it sound like they were kind of repeating a mantra that they probably got from Argus?
Well, it was. I mean, it did, because now the next scene that we see this being discussed in was a flashback, but it was Waller talking to Oliver about the same thing, about taking extreme measures, and it was the same phrasing. I believe it was the word was extreme measures in there, and. So you're right. It may be that is kind of the groundwork that Argus lays with its operatives to and I want to talk more about Waller and what she was doing with Oliver.
Yes.
But she was laying a lot of this groundwork with Oliver. So I believe there is an indoctrination process. And I'm very interested. Actually, let's go ahead and talk about a little bit about this now, because I'm really interested in the use of the words that Lila and Waller used to describe things that are euphemistic. For example, Lila talks about, well, we had to sanitize the team. And Diggle's like, you mean kill. And Oliver and Waller were talking about elements where, what do you say? They were using the term interrogated. And then another character pointed out that it's actually torture.
Yeah.
So
I think Oliver said that.
Yeah, you're right.
She wanted him to interrogate that guy. He said, "You mean torture him?"
Right. So Waller was trying to push Oliver to torture this guy to get information, right? Because in the end of the day, as Waller said, she wants the information. She doesn't care how she gets it, right?
Uh-huh.
So, my question to you is, does she really believe that Oliver is capable of these acts, that he would be good at them, or is this just her way of manipulating him to do what she wants by using euphemisms to praise him for, you know, I think you would be a good interrogator or torturer, you know, because it's an art and you're good like that. And I could, you know, I can just kind of hear one of those things where you're saying things to somebody and, you know, you're trying to weasel your way into their psyche to, mm-hmm. you know, twist them around. Do you think that's what she was doing, or do you think she actually thinks that Oliver is skilled for these things?
No, I think she was actually doing both of those things. I think she does believe he has the potential to do that and that he would be good at it. Otherwise, why would she have grabbed him and be using him like this? You know, why take him to Hong Kong in the first place if right. she didn't think he had those skills? But okay. I think she was manipulating him big time. And matter of fact, I don't think she ever believed that he was going to get what he needed from that, what she needed from that guy. I don't think she ever,
the
first guy.
Yeah.
I don't think she ever thought he was going to stop him. I think she knew that that bomb would go off and she would be able to show Oliver what had happened and turn him more towards his potential. And I really think that was her intention all along.
Hmm. Okay. Because when she then brings in the second person, so the first guy that she asks Oliver to torture, he has no there's no reason for him to feel an urgency to it. But with the second one, he knows that, you know, this person's dealing with China White, and that
China Wei.
Yeah. See, I'm going to do the same thing as Oliver does here. I'm just taking the easy way out. China Wei, right? Very good.
Close enough. Yeah.
So, and since, you know, she's involved with the triad and the family that he's staying with, he has personal stake in that. And so that, I don't know, it changes his resolve. It allows him to focus more on the matter at hand or whatever. Do you think that was purposeful on Waller's part, to that was the next person she brought in?
Oh, completely. Absolutely. I think, you know, the next person that she brought in had probably similar. I can't even remember. Did she say what she wanted from this guy? I don't even remember.
I don't remember.
But regardless,
she needed other information. It was because it had something to do with China White. So,
but oh, that's right. So, but I think that guy, you know, it probably something also equally awful that would happen if Oliver didn't do it. But now Oliver sees the results of him failing Waller. If he doesn't do what she wants him to do, he fails. The one thing that I kind of questioned, I guess, in this whole thing, when he went to the bombing site, and she's mm-hmm. just chewing him out, you know, saying, you know, this is your fault, this is it. I mean, she's yelling at him like Oliver's wanted this job, like Oliver was there in of his own accord, you know. I mean, she forced him into this, and I think she knows that. But if I was Oliver, you know, that would have been my, you know, gosh, you know, I never wanted to do this in the first place. Why are you talking to me like this? But yeah. I guess he, being where he is, he already kind of feels like he has no other option. I mean, he's already tried to escape. He's found out he can't do that. So
yeah, I mean, he doesn't have any other options for that. So
no, the flashback scenes this week were some of the most relevant of the season, though, I think. In it showed how Oliver really started to get dark, mm-hmm. you know, as a person.
Yeah, so, I mean, we always thought that he was kind of doing stuff to survive, and I guess he actually is, but, I mean, you know, Waller's taken him down to an entirely different level, because right. as the, I think it was the first prisoner said, you know, you have resolve to kill people, but it's different when you have to torture someone.
Right.
Like, if you don't have that resolve, you're not going to be able to do it.
The first two seasons, he was learning skills. You know, he was learning archery skills and survival skills and parkour skills and
ninja skills
and nunchuck bow staff. But he this season, he's learning how to do whatever it takes to achieve his goal, to achieve whatever it is whoever he's trying to save or mm-hmm. or pay back, I guess.
Right. Now, there was an interesting turn of phrase that Waller used at the bombing scene when she was, like you said, when she was chewing him out for not getting the information in time. She offers him a, quote, stab at redemption. And again, I thought that was a clever thing by the writers to do, but also on Waller's part, I mean, you know, because literally that's what she wants him to do. She wants him to stab people and torture them, and for her to use that as the phrase, just kind of twisted.
Yeah.
So
that's almost like an evil pun.
It is, and maybe that's why China is doing away with puns, because of people like Amanda Waller. I don't know. You heard about that, right? You can't.
I didn't hear about that. Is this China White,
is actually
or the actual
outlawing
country?
Puns.
Really, outlawing puns.
Yeah.
Wow. I am not going to be welcome in China ever.
Yeah, that just said I'm just not going to go. So,
darn.
So, I'm going to ask about the line that Waller gave here, where she says that torture is an art form; it's a skill one must cultivate. Is torture an art form? Is
Ooh.
Is torture art?
Is it art? Jeez. Well, not any museum I've ever gone to. But I mean, I guess if you look at in that kind of sick and twisted way, mm-hmm. it really could be. I mean, because you could just come straight out and, you know, beat somebody up to get what you want, or you can really do some nasty things that are, like I said, twisted. So, yeah, I mean, I guess it could be.
I don't know. I think there is a, what I want to say, kind of a, there is a proper way there is a refined way to do torture, and there is a basic way to do torture. So, like you say, you could just kind of beat somebody up, but you beat people too much, and you're either going to kill them, or they're going to, you know, at some point just either decide to shut off their pain sensors or something like that.
Right. They're going to get to a point where they know, look, they can't go any further with this, and I have held out this long, so right. I'm not going to need to give them what they want.
And then there's the people who it's like they know how to inflict the pain and let the people stew on it. And there's probably more of a psychological aspect to that kind of torture. I mean, there's obviously
sure.
there is psychological torture. There's physical torture. And then there's that combination of the two. I think it was in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. this season. There was a character who talks about how he was torturing somebody and had kept them alive kept them awake for 3 days while he was doing it. It was very difficult, and he was very proud of the work that he had done with that.
Well, that's when you push them to the point where you're inflicting some kind of pain, either psychological or physical or both, mm-hmm. and you get them to believe that you haven't gone as far as you can go, and yet they can't take it anymore.
Yeah.
So that if you don't give it to them, if you don't give them the information, it's only going to get worse.
Right. Right.
And that would be so. I mean, I don't know, man. I mean, I don't know much about art, but I know I don't like to get waterboarded.
Yeah. So, but I don't know that I'd use the term art form. I can see where the character is coming from because, you know, there's war is, you know, there's the art of war, I guess, by Sun Tzu, where, you know, I mean, it's like war is not really an art form either. But again, I think it's more of a turn of phrase that she uses, and Waller's really dangerous.
Yes, she is.
Because right now, I don't think we know how far she'll go, but we know that she goes far enough, and she, you know, I don't know that there's anything left of a good person, right? She gets jobs done.
Yeah.
But
yeah, she does what needs to be done regardless of what it is. I mean, regardless of
the situation.
The situation, yeah. And I get the impression that to work for Argus, it's not really a choice, you know? You don't really get to decide if you're working for Argus. They choose you, and then you do it.
It does seem like that. I kind of wonder about the grunt level people because I mean Lila is kind of has a you know she's beholden to them for something. I don't think we know what it is.
But she's got some authority though. I mean she's got pretty high level authority. That's one of the reasons Boomerang was after her is because she had the authority to sterilize the team in that case, you know,
sanitize.
That's right. Sanitize. So I,
exterminate.
Yeah, all I know is that, right now, they're probably going to have to put, some information up on LinkedIn because they lost a lot of employee when Boomerang came in. They,
Amanda Waller wants you to join her network. So Oliver's concern throughout this entire episode, or through a majority of this episode, was that he was not doing a good job, and it was hearkening back to some of the elements that we had in the first couple episodes of the season about losing his identity. And what he was deciding was that the further he pushed himself and the more times that he confronted the bad guys and tortured them or interrogated them, he was losing a little bit more of Oliver Queen. And all that was being left was the arrow. Like, he was starting to not be able to see Oliver Queen anymore, which he had made the decision earlier in the season to that he needed to keep both these pieces. I mean, that he was at one point he was ready to give up on Oliver Queen, and then he realized, no, I need to keep it. But now he's realizing that he's slowly losing that. And what he said is he's actually losing his humanity. That's what I feel has happened to Waller. She has been in the game, you know, so long here that she just, there's no humanity left in her. She has no compassion, which I think is, you know, what helps make us human. I think that compassion is a large component of, you know, caring and working with other people and stuff like that.
For sure.
So, and that's what Barry points out to Oliver, that he's not as dead, he's not as cold as Oliver thinks he is. And isn't that true? I mean, there are a lot of times where you might feel incredibly down on yourself, and other people are like, oh, that's nothing, don't worry about that. You know, other people, you know, can see the good, the light that's still inside you that he talks about, whereas, yep, you know, you may have just sunk into some depths, and you need those kind of people around that are more positive and can kind of lift you out of that funk.
Well, and, you know, you and I had talked about on Scarlet Velocity, we had talked about what Oliver gave to Barry, you know, in helping him become a hero. And then, you know, then we turned the discussion of, well, did Barry give Oliver anything? Now, I had obviously seen that episode of Flash before this one, and I talked to you before I actually saw the episode of Arrow. And in this episode, in Arrow, I really feel like Barry did give Oliver a lot to help him become a better hero, even though he's more experienced and, you know, has it down. He still inside is feeling like that's all he is he's just the Arrow. And he even said that.
Right.
But I really think Barry helped him to see that that's not all he is and that there is a lot more potential.
Well, and the fact, I mean, you know, sometimes it just takes a kind word to, you know, to get places. And that's what Barry does. I mean, first he tells Oliver that he's full of crap. And then he says, you know, you told me I could inspire people, which Barry is doing in Central City. I think there is a lot of inspiration that the Flash provides. Central City is an entirely different city than Starling. And that's another factor to this episode of Arrow, is that the crossover we had on the Flash episode was in bright and sunny Central City, where things are never quite as bad. And when you come back over the other side of the tracks here, Starling City is just a grim, dark place. And we have to play by different rules because, you know, my girlfriend got killed, my best friend got killed, my mom was murdered in front of me, and then Barry stops him and is like, you know what, my mom was murdered in front of me too, but that does not give me the right to go out and rage, you know, back at the world. And he says that Oliver, you know, was able to inspire him, not as that douchey Arrow, but as Oliver Queen, which is really incredible because Oliver fights for his city, but he can't do it as Oliver Queen. He does nothing for the city as Oliver Queen.
No, not lately anyway.
Not lately. And I don't even think really he was, even before he wasn't. I mean, he was, Oliver Queen before the island was a blight on the city of the, you know, the negativity of what, you know, the uber rich have done and, you know, at destroying and eating up the, you know, his own city. And when he came back, he felt he wanted to do something, but he just didn't know how to do it as himself. So he created the persona of the vigilante of the Arrow and, you know, went and that's how he serves his city. Whereas Barry is serving his city effectively in both of his identities. You talked about on Scarlet Velocity what a great CSI he is and that we'd like to see him do more of that. But he also, you know, uses his powers as the Flash to do things as well. What is also interesting is that this season in Arrow, we've been seeing the removal of everything Queen-related. Now that the matriarch is gone and basically it's just kind of Oliver and Thea, but Thea's not even really in the picture anymore. Oliver doesn't own his own company. Ray Palmer's taken it over. They've changed the name, and Ray Palmer is now in his civilian guise. He's the one that's campaigning for a better, brighter city and trying to save the city. And that probably is eating away at Oliver, even though they haven't really gotten into discussion of that as well.
Yeah. Yeah, he really has in this season been portrayed as pretty much just the Arrow. He's only in the basement of the club there, and he's fighting on the streets. They don't really show him in many other situations. Matter of fact, Lance even commented on that. Like, he hadn't seen him. He hadn't seen Oliver.
Oh,
and,
right.
You know, mm-hmm. we all know that he's seen Arrow, but yeah. he doesn't know that. and, you know, something just occurred to me after seeing both of these episodes is even when Oliver went to Central City in the episode of The Flash, he was staying down in this abandoned, beat-down shack,
mm-hmm.
you know, this falling-apart shack that's kind of symbolic of Starling City. So I hadn't even occurred to me. So even then he's in a dark place. Even then he's in a grimy, dungy I think that's going to start to change, though. I think we're going to start seeing that. Not next week, maybe.
Right.
But I think we're going to start to see him being able to be part of all start being Oliver Queen.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, I think those are all great points. One of the other cool things that I was hoping we would actually get to see it here, but we had Cisco presented Oliver with a brand new costume, and he was kind of holding it up, making some comments about it. I was hoping we'd get to see it because it sounds like there's a slightly different design to it. And based on the photos I've seen from next week, we may not see the new costume next week either because he's yeah. running around shirtless.
That's what it seems like. He didn't even maybe bring the costume.
Right.
But I was dying to see it. I even kind of looked on the internet to see if I could find anything. We've known he was kind of getting an update to his costume for quite a while. It's kind mm-hmm. of been out there. They've talked about it and stuff. But I'd be interested to see what it looks like because it's going to have new abilities. You know, he said it's able to hold more and it's got that Kevlar, so it protects right. him more. And
it's lighter.
It is lighter. Yeah.
Yeah.
Personally, I really enjoyed what Caitlin and Cisco and even Barry brought to this episode in a kind of a lightheartedness.
Cisco was great.
I'm just speculating that his goofiness, Cisco's goofiness, might have rubbed people the wrong way, especially if you only watch Arrow and you're kind of used to the dark
yeah.
part of it. But I really liked it. I thought it kind of gave a different take on the way people look at Oliver.
Yeah. Well, it's two things. One, I think Cisco is the Felicity of the Flash.
Oh, for sure.
He's the nerdy kind of character that is sort of the audience substitute with the vernacular and the jokes and things like that. Though Felicity does it a slightly different way. But, you know, we had the great stuff where you know, he's like, Cisco says, you know, let's see the Arrow Cave. She's like, we don't call it that. And then Roy later calls it the Arrow Cave. And Oliver turns to Felicity and says, see what you've done. Because we know she does call it that.
Yes.
But Cisco, like I said, he's also kind of that audience substitute. So he's like, oh, this is so cool. Look at wow, and this and that. And this is great. He's having a great time.
Well, and
which
I
makes
love his,
me want to have a great time.
I love his explanation of that too. Is that you've got to have that. You've got to keep that in yourself. That's what's fighting the bad. You know, that's the light fighting the bad. You know, when they're driving in the van,
right?
And
the A-team van.
The A-team van. He's talking with Roy and Diggle. I like that Roy. He's like, yeah, I like this guy.
Yeah.
Red's
a great color.
It was, and I'm so glad that they included that little speech that he gave in the van, because it really kind of explained why characters like Sisko and Felicity are really needed in shows like this.
Because if
you get too dark, and, you know, I'm not going to harp on, you know, Christopher Nolan's Batman or anything, the Dark Knight idea. But you don't have that in that. And I know that's a lot of people like that, and that there's nothing wrong with people liking that. But to me, what makes things entertaining and enjoyable to watch are characters like Sisko and Felicity.
Right. Well, it's kind of like, just as a slightly different view, it's like some of the humor they put into the Avengers. The Avengers gets dark in parts of it. You know, you've got Hawkeye under mind control. You've got Tony Stark potentially in danger from this god, Loki. But there's all these light moments. And there's not just one character that's kind of the light character. Everybody's got, well, there's several characters that have that ability in them. So I agree with you. I think any good storytelling is a balance. It's a balance of plot. It's a balance of characters and interactions between those characters and things like that. So always interesting to see. The final question I've got for you, and I loved the end sequence. I was kind of wondering how they were going to wrap this episode up, and I thought it wasn't an interesting exercise between the two heroes that they want to test themselves, basically, by going and seeing, you know, Oliver thinks he can beat Barry. Barry thinks he can beat Oliver. Who do you think actually won?
Who do I think actually won? You know,
and I'll tell you if you're right.
Okay, you do okay. That. I think Oliver won.
Okay, you're wrong.
I'm wrong? Okay. I think it came down very close again, like almost a tie, but I think Oliver probably either had a slight edge or Barry ended up tapping out or something, you know?
I guess tapping out. The real winners, Josh, at the end of the day, are you and I and the other fans here that watch this episode or these episodes.
There you go.
That's what it was. I think Oliver... You. I think Oliver could take him still.
Yeah,
I do. He's got, and maybe this is just an old guy talking, but I think it, you know, experience and skill and practice, you know, beat youth and vitality any day.
That's what so. I keep telling myself.
Yeah, get up, you old fart.
I think, and I also felt that was a very strong homage to the end of Rocky III.
Really?
Yes.
I am sad to say that I have not watched any of the Rocky films all the way through. I've seen large chunks of most of them. So what happens at the end of what Rocky III, you said?
Rocky III is where he fights Clubber Lang, Mr. T, after his trainer dies... has a heart attack and dies.
Spoiler
alert. Sorry about that. Hey, you should have seen him 30 years ago when they were out.
Thanks, Rock. And
after that, he gets trained by Apollo Creed, who he had fought in the first two movies. And so at the end of it, there was kind of a lighthearted match between Rocky and Apollo. And they don't actually show you the match. It's just like the end of this one. They're talking and kind of you know... dissing each other and
size each other up.
Yeah. And then the whole movie ends with them each throwing a punch at each other and then playing the Eye of the Tiger. They didn't play the Eye of the Tiger at the end of this era, but they could have. It would have been just fine.
Funny.
Yeah. And actually, you know what? One of our listeners needs to do that. They need to take that scene and then they need to add Eye of the Tiger at the end of it and post that.
I'd love to see that. Yeah, throw that up on our Facebook page over at facebook.com/Green Justice Podcast. That would be hilarious. Oh, cool. I didn't realize that. I mean, it seemed like it was something. The one thing I noticed about it was that a number of the support poles were red and yellow.
Oh.
And I was just like, wow, those are, why are those painted that way? They look very much like a Flash. So the Flash was walking down past red and yellow poles, and I was trying to see if Oliver was walking by green poles, which not really. They could have been, but they may have been faded. And may have just been total coincidence with the place that they were filming or whatever. So, yeah, I think Oliver probably had a little bit of an edge, like you said, but really exciting. And I think there is, obviously, they have set up a great potential for Barry to come back at some point. They've given him his own mannequin at the Arrow Cave. Hopefully they don't have to relocate, because wouldn't that stink? It's like they have to move again because, like, the bad guy finds out about their place, and then Barry comes back to town, and they haven't left a 40
They leave a naked fake Barry in the cave as they abandon it.
Where is he?
I would be willing to bet money that you do not see that mannequin in any other scene that – in any other episode that Barry's not in. I bet you that won't be in the shot. I could be wrong, but –
I will bet you a comic book.
All right, there we go.
All right, because I think that they will just have it in the background in when we are in the Arrow Cave. So let's keep an eye out for that.
Now, are you sure? Because if I lose, I'm going to have a really difficult time finding a comic book you don't have. So if there's anything you want to adjust to that so you can get something you don't have yet, you let me know.
Okay. All right, that sounds good. We'll figure it out, the details of that as it comes to pass.
Okay.
Before we get into our references, I just want to go over a couple pieces of feedback we got from some of our fans. Thank you guys so much for writing in to let us know. This feedback is specifically regarding the discussion you and I had 2 weeks ago, about other crossover shows in the history of TV. We're trying to think back and figure out what shows actually ever had a crossover, and we didn't come up with any good ones except for, you know, maybe like Facts of Life, Different Strokes kind of thing, but that's not really in this genre, so that never counted. H. Keith from Facebook, or on Facebook, let us know. He said, well, hey, how about the Batman Green Hornet crossover event back in the late 60s? And I smacked myself in the head and said, well, of course, that I never have seen the Green Hornet show from the 60s, but boy, I totally remember when Bruce Lee showed up on Batman. That was great.
I do too. That was a good one.
And then Rob, a.k.a. Toon Man, let us know on Facebook. He said, back in the 70s, there was a crossover episode. Part one was on the $6 Million Man, and part two was on the Bionic Woman, and it was the Bionic Bigfoot episode. So he says, I'm listening to the Drawback Your Bow episode and heard you discussing it, so I thought I'd put in my two cents. That is also another good example, because, as you mentioned, this was not what you would consider a crossover because the plot did not continue from one episode to the other. The Bionic Man, or the $6 Million Man, Bionic Woman one is an excellent example because the plot does continue. It's totally continued. The Batman one, not so much. It's more of just kind of a guest appearance of Green Hornet on the show. But thanks very much for you guys for writing in and letting us know. We really enjoy reading all the different feedback that we get either in email or Twitter or Facebook. So keep that correspondence
and
coming.
Thanks to all the new likes on Facebook. I've noticed a few new likes on Facebook. Thank you very much.
Yeah, we are getting, I think as the shows are getting higher ratings, we are getting more views and more likes and everything like that, which is excellent. Okay, so let me run down a few of the references here. I think there was some cool stuff going on. Jerry, who is Felicity's assistant, was mentioned again, and that's a character that we talked about on a previous episode named after Jerry Conway, who's a writer for DC Comics. As I mentioned, the title of the series, or the title of the episode, was named after a DC comic series called Brave and the Bold. Cisco mentioned the Arrowmobile and the Arrow Cave, which we've discussed, and actually were two things that existed in Green Arrow comics, way back in the 40s, I guess.
Ooh, yes, back when an Arrowmobile was not the most bizarre thing you could think of.
Yes. Now, there was a lot of stuff we talked about in this episode. We didn't really talk too much about Captain Boomerang, but I felt there were so many other things that were cool that we wanted to talk about. But Captain Boomerang, one of my favorite Rogue's villains from Flash's Rogue's Gallery. He is mentioned as, quote, going rogue in this episode, which I think is a nice nod.
Yeah,
plus, he gets put on Lian Yu at the end, which seemed really Slade, quick.
That seemed dangerous, too. I'm
yeah,
not sure,
I do not really think him and Slade should be hanging out together.
No.
Who takes care of them? They're just abandoned in a prison on an island, like, locked up. So, like, who feeds them?
I you know who I picture? I picture the albino from Princess Bride. He's just down there.
Mel Smith.
That's who I'm picturing. But I real quickly, I really did like Captain Boomerang. Great villain. He did a great job. So I just wanted to mention that because we didn't really talk about him too much. But I thought he did a really good job of being a very capable villain.
Mm-hmm. Oh, if and when he comes back with the Suicide Squad or with Flash's Rogues Gallery,
mm-hmm.
look out. That's going to be really neat. So I'm sure he will be back because you know, all the Spartacus actors are now hanging out on the island, I guess, except for Nyssa. She's
maybe that's what they're doing. They're training to be gladiators.
Barry mentioned Multiplex, which was one of the supervillains he fought, or the metahumans he fought in one of the early episodes. It was a character that could replicate himself multiple times. Captain Lance mistakes Barry for Bart Allen, calls him Bart Allen, and so Bart is actually Barry's grandson from the comics, who is a character named Impulse. We've talked
also,
a little about him.
Also has speed powers.
He also had speed powers, yes. Were those genetic, or did he get in an accident as well? Do you know?
I think Bart's were genetic.
I'm not a huge fan of that iteration of the Flash character. Bart was a little annoying, but you can listen to our Scarlet Velocity podcast. I think from like 2 or 3 weeks ago, we talk a lot about Bart Allen because there was another mention of him on the show. There were several street names mentioned here. 8th and Wilcott, but I couldn't find anything that related to. But Infantino and Adams was another intersection. And Carmine Infantino and Neil Adams are the most famous artists for The Flash and for Green Arrow, respectively. So I thought that was a nice shout-out on this. And then we got a new title card again. This would be the second time we've gotten a brand-new title card for Arrow that didn't actually feature the Arrow of the season. Isn't this weird that we kind of really didn't notice this until the beginning of this season and the last season with that, the fact that they were changing the Arrows, and now all of a sudden we're getting different title cards almost, well, the last two episodes.
Yeah. Yeah, so. The Cupid Arrow, and now this time they just had the Bolt of Lightning and Sans Arrow.
Yes. Sans Arrow. Oh, Sans Arrow. The Arrowhead.
Yes. Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. An actual Arrow. Not
the
word Arrow.
Not the word Arrow. It gets very confusing when you're talking about Arrow because are we talking about the person or the object or the show?
Yeah,
or
try Google searching Arrow or Flash, and you're going to get a variety of items, not just the shows.
Yeah, it's difficult to kind of streamline searches for when you're trying to get information on that. So, well, that was a really interesting episode. Oh, and there was one other reference I wanted to put in here. So we're watching Barry do the salmon ladder.
Yes.
And I had skipped over that here. And Felicity mentions that Oliver does the salmon ladder every Wednesday, which is a nice shout out to the fact that Arrow is on Wednesdays.
Will make no sense when it's in syndication.
Exactly. It'll just be that when someone goes to IMDb and is reading the trivia for that this episode, it'll be, oh, here's a funny joke, and because it used to air on Wednesdays. And then Cisco talked about Barry and Oliver being in a league of their own, and I'm pretty sure that's a reference to the Tom Hanks movie with Gina Davis about the female baseball players. You know, There's No Crying in Baseball, that one?
Yeah.
Maybe? No, I think it's probably more a nod to the Justice League.
The Justice League of their own?
A Justice League of their own, yes. So, but he didn't say that.
Bad movie merges there. There's a crossover for you. Rosie O'Donnell is going to be on Arrow.
It's Rosie O'Donnell's Wonder Woman. So, all right. Well, with that, that's all we've got for this week's episode of Green Justice.
Well, I hope you enjoyed this episode, man. There was a lot we didn't even get to talk about. It was a fantastic episode. And if you like Green Justice, please make sure you leave feedback for us on iTunes. We'd love to hear from you. And, you know, you can contact us, too. Contact us at email at greenjustice@randomchatter.com or our Twitter feed at greenjusticepod. And, again, like all our other friends, you can go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/greenjusticepodcast. Make sure you make that video with Eye of the Tiger at the end. Want to see that.
All right. Thanks, sweetie. You can also check out our other shows, other podcasts that we do, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files and Scarlet Velocity, a Flash podcast, which are also on randomchatter.com. And all our shows are also available in the iTunes Store and through Stitcher for Android or iOS. And, of course, if you enjoy this podcast, please be sure to tell your friends about us. And remember, if you don't keep listening, you have failed the city.
This podcast is not endorsed by Warner Brothers Television or DC Entertainment. The official website for Arrow can be found at www.cwtv.com. Green Arrow, Arrow, and related elements are copyright DC Entertainment and Warner Brothers Television.